Oh, hello. My name's a Johnny Goldmane, and those chaps over at Commander and MTG podcast make me steadfast, if you know what I mean. Meow.
Welcome to the Commander and MTG podcast, everyone. I'm Phil DeLuca, and my fellow hosts are...
Sean Kirkcopain-Watson.
And Nate Burgess.
Howdy.
We're your friendly neighborhood commander, community-oriented podcast, and we will put a spotlight on goings-on of the EDH/Commander community. Each episode, we will talk about topics you want to hear about and focus on listener contributions. Remember to check us out on Twitter at CommanderInMTG and contribute there. Remember, we have three banned topics. We will never, ever talk about these topics. Religion, politics, and Hearthstone.
You know, you don't need to say at when you're talking about Twitter.
You're right. Just but I did, because I liked saying at twice. It reminds me of
the Battle of Hoth.
That's right.
The big metallic dog walkers.
You are such a geek.
Well, speaking as the only non-geek here, it's sad having to spend time with a couple of nerds like you.
That's true. Yeah. You are the jock representative on the podcast, aren't you?
That is ironically true. I do like my sports, Go Giants, and my soccer team is the Tottenham Hotspurs, you Americans out there.
I thought that was my sports team.
It's also your sports team. I've designated you.
Imposed upon you.
Now, just for the record, it hurt every single part of my soul to use the word soccer then, by the way.
Well, you can't use football right now. It's kind of in disgrace, isn't it?
No, the Americans are saving it. America! Bleep yeah! Thanks, America.
FIFA Las Vegas.
Oh, God.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this is the week after GP Las Vegas, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
I don't know. Was there a GP in Las Vegas? No one told me about it.
Yeah. Who knew? So, about 1 week ago, Nate and I were already in sunny Las Vegas. Of course, exactly 1 week ago, it was dark. Not that we could tell, because we were indoors, probably drinking large quantities of alcoholic beverages.
Rock!
And at this point, we were actually already hanging out with our friend Chris Thacker, at ThackFu. That was a lot of fun, and we'll actually get to ThackFu. If you've heard our GP Vegas podcast, you know that we have more coming and that we recorded right there on the floor and... at the Command Zone Gathering, which was actually Thursday night before the GP started. A whole bunch of folks got into town one day early and used that opportunity to have a party with the Command Zone folks. I call it a party, even though it was really like a little... I've been to smaller game conventions, right? So this was kind of a small game convention focused on Commander... Yeah. Nate, what did you think of it? I want to thank all the people we met there, but what were your general impressions?
No, it was the kind of party I would want to go to.
Yeah.
It was good. There was games all the time. Everyone had a positive energy.
Yeah. This is what I loved about it. Everybody was in a good mood. There didn't seem to be any of, you know, like that guy or that gal who kind of... makes their presence known, but unpleasantly, like at a, you know, Friday Night Magic or anything. It was just a bunch of really cool folks having a really good time.
It was.
And so we met a bunch of good people there. I'm not going to be able to name them all, Nate. I don't know if you'll be able to name them all either. We've already heard our episode where we speak to Mark Gravel, Peyton Bullis, Andre Treiber. We also had an opportunity to meet Heather Dawn, who is at Revised Angel on Twitter, Aaron Campbell, who is at Original Estrus on Twitter, Jason Alt from Brainstorm Brewery. Oh my god.
Let me have a try of that, folks. That's Brainstorm Brewery.
Thanks for rescuing me. And Maria and Megan from Magic the Amateuring, who are at MTAcast on Twitter. I have since started listening to their show, and it's a real blast. And it is. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Their Commander episode is hilarious.
Do you remember Syphil and Ollie? Because they remind me of Syphil and Ollie.
Yes, in that very kind of charming, heartwarming sense. A little bit, a lot goofy. Okay, they're a lot goofy. They just have a good time.
A very quick second on MTAcast. If you are listening to this and you're just getting into Magic, Megan and Maria both started Magic on their podcast. They started off as total amateurs, hence the name Magic the Amateuring, and have learned to play through having a mentor for a while for the first X amount of episodes of the episode. It's really, really good to get you into it, especially if you're interested in starting the drafting format. And drafting and limited format can be, and a concealed format can be, quite daunting if you've not done it before. I highly recommend. Also, they're really, really funny, and they love it if you say cheesy one-liners to them if you meet them at their FNM. And if you listen to their podcast, you'll be chuckling right now at that.
Sean, you've been listening to the MTA cast for a long time, right? Since their third episode?
I did. I picked up at episode 3 when just cruising for podcasts, because that's what I do on a Friday night. And I just randomly found it really early on and got really into it. Used to listen to every week that and Marshall Sutcliffe Limited Resources. And then realised I don't play Limited. But continued listening, even though I wasn't actually playing in the format that they were mostly talking about. And that is a testament to how good their podcast is.
Are they Canadian?
No, they're from Minnesota.
Minnesota, okay.
Go Wild.
Because she says, I think it's Maria, she says dragons.
Yes.
Like Phil, who is the American president between Jimmy Carter and George Herbert Walker Bush?
The Gipper.
But how would you pronounce his first and last name?
Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Dragon.
Ronald Dragon, yes.
They're dragons. She talks about dragons.
Well, she does.
I'm sure you'd rather live under Dragonomics than Reaganomics. Oh, we're talking about politics.
Too late.
Next, we'll be talking about the price of milk in Thatcher's Britain.
Well, it's gone up.
Wait, what kind of milk?
Dog's milk. That's all we can afford over here now.
It's like us soon we'll be eating sparrows' eggs.
Soon? Do you not do it already? What?
Well, usually on special occasions like Christmas and Thanksgiving. But soon it'll be for breakfast. All those wonderful breakfast pictures I sent you, Sean, eventually will contain fewer eggs, I think.
So anyone else you met at the Command Zone gathering then?
Yeah, I think we need to give special thanks to Josh and Jimmy from the Command Zone for organizing that. They put it together. I'm certain they spent a lot of time and energy and probably a little bit of money putting that all together. By all accounts, though, they won it back at craps the next few nights, or at least lost enough sleep that they think they won it back. But the event was fantastic, and really, guys, thank you so much for putting that on and making the effort to do that. You really organized it, and I'm terribly sorry that you didn't hit the number of attendees that you expected. Instead, you got 3 times that number. So congratulations, guys. This was a great, great event. You did a lot for the community.
Absolutely.
I presume, Phil, you're only sorry because it meant you could only draft 3 pack drafts instead of 4? That's why he's sorry, listeners. Don't think he's kind.
That was really a shame. I was looking forward to my first ever 4-pack draft, and too many people showed up. They had to actually cut us back to 3.
There was too much fun in the room, and it had to be more evenly distributed.
Yeah. Yeah. They democratized the fun, as it were.
Where the hell was my slice of fun, boys?
Yeah, but it was...
Well, you could have gone to Utrecht.
Do you know how far Utrecht is from Manchester in England?
Well, it's closer to you than Vegas.
It's probably harder to get to. Why would I want to leave my island? Next time, you bring Vegas to me.
I think we'll work on that. Let's see. Manchester, UK to Utrecht, Germany.
Let's ask the internet. How far is it?
For those of you listening at home are wondering why we're doing this, it's because the internet has only recently been discovered in whatever rural, redneck, hick part of America these two live in. And they've discovered they can have a search engine.
An engine?
Did you know that you can ask it what time it is in other places of the world and the internet will tell you?
Wow.
Okay, so enough teasing Sean about not getting to a GP near him. Again, special thanks to Josh and Jimmy. Really, you guys are incredible. We're big fans. We hope to have you on the show, and we'll talk about GP Las Vegas sometime. In other news this week, the Magic community positively erupted because of a draft pick made by Pascal Maynard, who made it to, I think he was top 8 at GP Las Vegas. Everybody is calling it Goyfgate, which is the most ridiculous thing I have ever heard. He is being, or was being, castigated because he chose to draft a dun-dun-dun foil Tarmogoyf. Which, prior to the release of Modern Masters 2015, the foil Tarmogoyf from Modern Masters the first was over $400 or $500, and right now the foil Tarmogoyf is going for $250. So for anybody who thinks that he should not have drafted that, I really think you've got some strange values at play. It's not only the most powerful card, probably the most powerful card in Limited, and so at the very worst he's drafting it so nobody else can use it against him, but it also pays for part of his ticket to the next Grand Prix because he's on the pro circuit, so I don't have any problems with that. Do either of you guys? I realize I slipped into an editorial mode, but I just thought that there were so many better uses of your time if you were one of the people who complained about his drafting this Goyf.
Okay, so I'm going to play devil's advocate here slightly. And just for the record, I completely agree with what you just said, Phil. You should not have a problem with him drafting that at all. But just to try and argue the other side of the coin, would the Tarmogoyf fit in his deck? Would he have stood to earn more from a prize pot at the GP by drafting some... Oh, I can't even do this. No, it was wrong.
It did not. It was not applicable to the deck he was already drafting at the time, I believe.
If you have a problem with someone taking $200 out of a booster pack, go have a long cold shower and rethink your basic life choices.
Yeah, even a pro player...
likes money?
Well, somebody asked a question like, would you pay $250 for one more Burst Lightning in your deck, which I think is the other card that he passed up choosing.
Yeah.
And his answer at the time was no. He has since looked at it in the bigger picture and said like that Burst Lightning would have given him a better chance at qualifying for the pro for the next GP and for Worlds, right? I don't know. I think in the 1 minute you have to make a selection, that was a pretty good choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have no problem with what he did. But then again, if I'm playing Magic and it's not EDH, I have no idea what I'm doing. So, yeah, I've heard Tarmogoyf is the best thing, the bee's knees. So if I saw it and it was foil, I'd probably take it too. Yeah, sure.
I actually think I might have just taken a Goyf full stop, foil or not. But, you know.
Yeah.
Still a considerable chunk of change to open out of a booster.
Yeah, either way. And so Nate,
welcome
I think,
to the Commander in Draft podcast, where
where guys who know nothing about drafting talk about it.
I would always take the most expensive cards, Phil.
It's so shiny.
If it's rare or mythic rare, I take it.
I've never heard of a mythic rare that wasn't super bummy.
So, Sean, I think you have a special shout-out you want to make.
Yeah, I really wanted to thank my cat, Brody, because while this lot were having fun and eating amazing food and playing wonderful games of Magic, my little ginger cat, Brody, staved off the vast abyss of loneliness that was sinking into my life. He's such a cute little boy. A little pink nose.
Did he let you pet his belly once?
Once, but the nurse said, I've got to stop doing it because the suturing is starting to really scar my arms up. he's not a cat for bellies. Oh, sorry, he is a cat, I guess. He doesn't like his belly being touched.
Yeah.
I have my son to look after as well, you know. He's not covered in ginger fur, so...
He does still scratch your arm when you pet his belly.
That is true.
With all four limbs.
Blooming hands. Anyway, Magic the Gathering.
Magic the Gathering. So today's main topic, we're going to talk about Planeswalkers in Commander. And specifically, we're talking about them as part of the 99 as opposed to one of the five Planeswalkers that can serve as a commander or the variant that some groups use to allow Planeswalkers as a commander in place of a legendary creature. So we're more or less just, you know, we're sticking to, if you will, vanilla EDH. And so we also have a watch list segment.
The watch list.
Yeah, so let's get to it. What segment is this again?
The watch list. Meow.
Right. Sean, why don't you introduce the card that's on our watch list?
Okay, so for those of you that are listening to the podcast for the first time, the watch list is a semi-regular segment we do where we discuss cards which are contentious in the format and cards that sometimes people have discussed or suggested should be banned but are not currently on the banned list. The card for this week's watch list, bear in mind we're talking about Planeswalkers, is... Doubling Season.
Enchantment. If in effect would put one or more tokens onto the battlefield under your control, it puts twice that many of those tokens onto the battlefield instead. If in effect would place one or more counters on a permanent you control, it places twice that many of those counters on a permanent instead. Are you playing a green token deck? Are you playing Rhys the Redeemed? Are you playing Ulasht or Marith or Gave? Go on.
Or any planeswalkers.
Well, there. I wouldn't say any if you're pulling a one-off in an otherwise green deck.
I mean, green isn't one of the four colors of Magic that I use.
Four colors of Magic.
But. you must have heard people talk about the color square. I've heard about green cards, so at least I can talk about this. So why is this good with Planeswalkers, gentlemen, whilst we're talking relevant today? Because I find when people discuss this card for potential bannings, Planeswalkers often get brought up as one of the reasons.
Well, the thing is, when you put a Planeswalker on the field, it has loyalty counters when it enters the battlefield. And their ultimate ability is usually less than twice that many counters. So you can put one of those Planeswalkers on the field and do their ultimate ability instantly.
So I've seen this deck used horribly. I've seen this used in a Planeswalkers deck horribly. Notable times, I saw someone drop a Tamio the Moonsage, ultimate her, which allows her to keep recurring her spells. Which allowed them to play a Jace Architect of Thought, which allowed them to ultimate him to keep pulling cards out of opponents' decks and just keep casting them over and over again. It's just horrible. For me, particularly in a Planeswalker themed deck. Doubling Season feels very oppressive. As soon as it's down, the whole game is like, you have to kill the guy with the Planeswalkers if no one's got an answer to the Doubling right. Season immediately.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Doubling Season is Doubling Season is one of my favorite cards. It was when when it was reprinted in Modern Masters, I made sure to pick up a copy of that. I'm not sure if I like the original Ravnica version of it better, but whatever, it does the same thing. Since I tend to play a lot of token decks and kind of pivot around green, it's an incredibly useful card. And if I'm playing a token deck, I will also make sure to keep a couple of slots open for some of my favorite Planeswalkers, which I think we'll be getting into a little bit later.
Certainly will. So,
yeah.
One of the pieces of evidence that this card is a touch too powerful. I don't like the word Barelkin, as people say. I don't think anything's really broken. But Wizards of the Coast have...
Skullclamp disagrees with you.
So does a Planeswalker that's coming up on your list later, Phil. Wizards of the Coast have not once but twice tried to print a different version, essentially, of this card, which is fairer for other people. Those two cards are, in no particular order, Parallel Lives and Primal Vigor. So, Parallel Lives, to go over this very quickly, these are both green enchantments. Parallel Lives is 3 and a green. If an effect would put one or more tokens onto the battlefield under your control, it puts twice that many tokens onto the battlefield instead. And Primal Vigor is 4 and a green. If one or more tokens would be put onto the battlefield, twice that number of tokens are put onto the battlefield instead. And if one or more +1/+1 counters would be placed on a creature, twice that many +1/+1 counters are placed on that creature instead. The main difference is Primal Vigor affects your opponents as well as yourself. And neither of them affect Planeswalkers.
I don't like Primal Vigor because it's symmetrical and it allows your opponents to get the benefit from your card. Parallel Lives is a lot better than that. And so whenever I put these cards into a deck, I consider Primal Vigor. And if I'm really token-centric and think I can do a much better job than another token deck, and there are a lot of token decks in Commander, then I'll put it in, but at the same time, it's too risky. Maybe that's because I was burned once by an Endrick Sar deck, but that's another story.
Yeah, I recently got burned by having my own Primal Vigor out from my Garve deck. Garve being stolen by, it was one of our listeners actually, Radlad, Nick Jaragoski.
Nick Jaragoski.
Yeah, he stole my Garve and then produced a billion Saprolings off of Garve because every time he was putting one in, it was getting two, which then allowed him to sacrifice it to his altar to put two more tokens back on Garve and just went infinite using my own cards.
That's a very demure way for him to play, huh?
It was a Dimir deck, and I think it was the Dimir punishing me for daring to go outside of blue. But yeah, it's a double-edged sword. But so what do we think about these two cards in the context of Doubling Season? Is this Wizard saying Doubling Season's too powerful, but we don't want to ban it? Or I don't know.
I think the fact that anybody running either of these cards runs both of them says a lot about the power of even just doubling the number of tokens in play. But Doubling Season for one more colorless mana is just incredible and should go in every deck, including Super Friends decks, which is what is the common term for Planeswalker-centric decks.
So you've got a big bunch of chums all getting together to have a...
And they're all tutoring for Doubling Season as soon as they can. It is true that if I have doubling season, then I also have Parallel Lives.
Yeah.
I run in my Garve deck, I have Doubling Season, Parallel Lives, Primal Vigor, and Hardened Scales, which is the other half of
gives you counters. Yeah, gives you an extra counter.
Gives you plus one.
Is that Daggatar in the picture?
Anyway, I hope to talk about Daggatar.
Daggatar.
It's an Abzan guy.
In Ardent Scales? No,
it's just
not
a generic Abzan.
Just an Abzan dude. Daggatar.
Daggatar.
They're all generic. They don't take pride of place amongst the noble. Like, they're all like about collective company, aren't they?
They're just they're just cogs.
But they don't have banding
slash Dromoka wheel.
Yeah. And that's why it's a terrible color set. Who plays black, white, green? Awful. Anyway, so that's doubling season. If you are lucky enough to own one or have the money to buy one, I highly recommend it. It does draw a lot of hate off your friends, though, so you have to use it wisely.
Yeah, and make sure you have a lot of.
If you're playing Commander and your opponent plays a doubling season, then you are on a clock that's probably about two or three turns.
I mean, my return to dust that I have at home, I've crossed it out and put on a biro on it. Destroy one target enchantment and doubling season if you've cast it in your main phase. But so, gentlemen, planeswalkers in Commander. Why?
Now I feel compelled to lower my voice.
He's not become Transylvanian. Okay, so planeswalkers in Commander.
As part of the 99, right?
Yeah, planeswalkers is part of the 99 in Commander. We've already said that at the beginning of the episode. Not as the commander, in
as one of the commander. 99
in Commander.
Yeah,
and so one of the questions when we were fielding this with our listeners over the last couple of days that came up more than once is why planeswalkers at all. So, what do you guys think? Why do you include planeswalkers in your decks when you do?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very pithy way of putting it.
Did I say it wrong?
Did you drop your mic when you said that?
No, just versatility. Boom, I'm out of here.
All right, boom, should I expand upon that? Hang on.
Woo! Okay. That'd be lovely. Boop!
I'm sorry, I'm having too much fun.
I like them because of their versatility.
Totally. It's like we've only taught him certain words to say, and we just flash a light in his eyes when he has to repeat them.
It's a good word. I gotta say it, man.
Nate, why do you like it? Click. Artifact. No, the other one. The other one.
I'm done.
Hey, I broke Phil.
Okay, we need to give Phil a second so he can get all the water out of his eyes so that he can see the screen again.
If he lifts up his beard, he can mop up his cheeks. I presume that's why he has it, a tear rag.
Oh, God. Okay, sorry, guys.
I thought his beard was like a cummerbund for food.
I had that very discussion at dinner tonight.
A family of nesting squirrels living in it, picking up
with earth.
Oh God in heaven!
I was just saying. It's going to sound like anyone who can listen to this at home. If you hear a creaking in the background, that is my own personal planeswalker. My wife. Getting ready to go to work on my ancient English.
How house. Much of this is going to be in the episode?
I don't know, but
some of it.
Some of it, yeah, because we have to explain why I sound like I suddenly have a head cold and/or have been crying.
So,
maybe we'll trim the coughing.
So, I'm going to ask this question again, and we need to reduce the giggling.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Nate, why planeswalkers? Someone flashed the light in his eyes.
that didn't help. Oh God. Oh my.
Welcome to Commander in Podcast, the professional Commander podcast.
Yes, we only buy the best microphones.
Well, Sean, I like planeswalkers because of their versatility and because their ultimate always presents a huge threat that opponents have to answer, and so they attack their planeswalker instead of you and reducing your own life points.
I think Nate's touched on a great point there in the defense factor, that once a planeswalker hits the table, it will have to attract threat from your opponents. So it does protect your own life total a touch. There are a couple of not particularly helpful to our format planeswalkers out there. But if you want to find a planeswalker that has a great sorcery speed effect that's going to support whatever your strategy is, there's normally a guy for the job out there, or gal for the job. And I think that the amount of times that most commander decks I run at least three planeswalkers in my colours. And they tend to always be powerful when they come down. Yeah, they're just great. Phil?
I tend to use at least one planeswalker in every deck that I build. I like, as Nate put it, the versatility. If you're playing, as I typically do, green, and you have enough planeswalkers, say anywhere between 3 and 5, you probably also want a doubling season. The synergy with doubling season and planeswalkers is almost a gimme. If you've got a doubling season and you play a planeswalker, you are probably going to be able to ultimate that planeswalker right away. And certain cards, which I almost named some, but we'll get to naming them. If you can cast one and immediately use it, awesome.
This is a question for all of us. When you're choosing a planeswalker to put into your deck, what do you automatically go for? What sort of abilities? I personally go for a planeswalker that can protect itself, which is a phrase I'm not reinventing the wheel when I say that. Any planeswalker that can come down and say, this is a way of stopping me dying immediately to my opponent's attacks, particularly if that's on its plus ability, that is a very powerful effect. It creates problems for your opponent in all sorts of ways.
I generally look for something that poses an immediate threat. I'm hesitant to get into anything specific, but I look at one of the cards, and because I tend to play a creature-heavy deck, this Planeswalker really helps me get creatures out, and it's hard to deny the effect that Planeswalker has when it hits the table, even though it's kind of expensive, and then I'm able to effectively tutor for creatures immediately.
I think we agree on that, because my picks are either things that go around particular strategies in their colors, or once they hit the table, they just start kicking over chairs and flipping over tables and just making their mark on the board state.
It's weird. I'm looking at my picks now, and I'm realizing that I've picked very control archetype kind of planeswalkers. That's unusual for me, isn't
it?
I've gone the opposite way. So you people out there that aren't obsessed with giant animals like these two are, don't worry. I will be catering to your tastes.
Do you have any planeswalkers that aren't either blue or black? Oh, wait, yes, you do.
Yeah, I do. And I'm not going to spoil anything. We'll come
it's
to
not
that
a bad
point
one.
In a second.
It's not a bad one.
So should we get into the picks, gentlemen?
Sure, why don't you start?
Okay, so my number 5 pick was a Jace. It's Jace, Architect of Thought. Now, he immediately isn't the most obvious Jace for power level. He's 2/2 blue, he's a planeswalker. I'll go over his abilities very fast. Comes in with 4 loyalty. You can +1 him until your next turn. Whenever a creature an opponent controls attacks, it gets -1/-0 to end of turn. His most relevant ability, which is the one you're going to be activating 9 times out of 10, is -2, reveal the top 3 cards of your library. An opponent separates them into 2 piles, put 1 pile into your hand and the other into the bottom of your library in any order. So a mini fact or fiction. Exactly. And his -8 is for each player, search their library for a non-land card, exile it, and you can cast it at any point. Without paying its mana cost. Or obviously you have to cast it at legal times, but you get it for the rest of the game as access to you. So the mini fact or fiction there for -2. So you've got card draw coming out of that. Often you'll get 2 cards, but you're also getting card filtering to go and find the answer you're looking for. There are a lot of the Jaces allow you to draw cards. There is another Jace which does similar and will allow you to do it, but this guy is, from a budget perspective, is I think he's at $3 because he's had a reprint in a dual deck. He comes down. I've sometimes plus one'd him just to stop a horde of 1/1 tokens getting in because the -1/-0 can be very relevant. It also protects himself. His ultimate is not that great.
Well, his ultimate is somewhere between a bribery and a blatant thievery.
Yeah, it's a blatant bribery, you could say.
Yeah.
Or a breebery. Oh, that sounds a bit too strange.
Yeah, that's try again.
Yeah, okay. Well made. But the amount of times I've given my opponent the option of the three cards, and they've actually given me the two cards I wanted out of the three because they've not read my board state correctly, that's happened so many times. And I've gone, yay, not only have I got the card I wanted, I've got a free card as well with it. Or
it's actually a harder choice than Fact or Fiction, because usually Fact or Fiction you can isolate one card,
yep,
and then put all the rest on to kind of balance it out. But here it's only a difference of one card.
The other thing, you can do quite a political play. So if you've made an alliance with someone, you can drop it and say to that opponent, I want you to give me all three cards. And they'll go, okay, because there's nothing on that that says the cards can't be two piles of 3 and 0.
I've heard tales of many people, actually, who somebody will cast a Fact or Fiction at the table. They will automatically say, I'm just going to put it 0 and 5. Sorry. So if you can get some kind of situation like that because of your own political maneuvering, awesome for you.
Yep.
Bad for everybody else.
Otherwise, you just ask the most inexperienced player at the table do the splitting.
Yes, if you're not pressed for time. Generally, in my paper group, we will go for someone that knows what they're doing, just depending on how long the game's going. But yeah, asking the noob is a mean but sometimes effective way.
Yeah, I've been asked many times.
Sorry, Nate. I just stop treating you like a noob. You regularly kick my ass.
Yay!
So, Nate, what's your number five choice?
My number five choice is a fan favorite, big fan favorite among our listeners, Garrick Wildspeaker. Mm-hmm. 2 colorless and 2 green. If you give him a +1, you untap 2 target lands. If you give him a -1, you put a 3/3 green beast creature token onto the battlefield. If you give him a -4, creatures you control get +3/+3 and gain trample until end of turn. So he's like a miniature Crater Hoof Behemoth there. He comes in with a loyalty of 3. His first ability, the +1, untap 2 target lands. If you play Gaia's Cradle or if you play any kind of enchantment that increases the mana that your lands put out, or you're playing any of those double lands that... what do you call them?
The things like Simic Growth Chamber, etc. Yeah,
right.
The bounce lands.
Yeah, the lands that give more than one mana. Then his ability is just going to give you instant ramp, and boom, double mana. If you have a Gaia's Cradle and you have that kind of strategy where you have a bunch of creatures on the field, then untap 2 target lands just gives you Genesis Wave power to end the game.
Does anybody actually play him for his ultimate?
I've seen it happen once in a token strategy, right, and someone just did it to end the game. I like this guy because people tend to ignore him. It's not the most obviously great ability. Untap 2 target lands is fantastic. Feels like a very blue ability on a side note. But it's not coming down and going, right, I draw cards or I automatically destroy stuff, etc. So, and his ultimate isn't threatening at all at first glance.
And it's actually not very expensive in loyalty, comparatively.
Yeah, I think that's probably well balanced, though, because it's costing the spell Overrun is exactly what it's doing. +3/+3, trample to end a turn. Overrun is not a broken effect. It's a powerful effect at the right circumstance, but I don't think Garrick draws too much hate off the table.
No, not the Wildspeaker. The Wildspeaker is pretty tolerable. So if you're looking for versatility and repeatable effects, it's almost as good as an enchantment. In a few ways, it's actually better because it can't be the subject of enchantment removal.
Phil, you're number 5.
Why, Sean, I'm happy you asked. My number 5 is a card that, I'll be honest, I haven't played yet, but I'm really looking forward to it in the right deck.
I've ultimated this card.
Yeah, I mean, I would... I don't know how that was allowed to happen, but okay.
So what card is it?
We're talking about Narset Transcendent.
Transcendent.
Narset Transcendent. For 2 and a white and a blue, you get a Planeswalker Narset whose +1 ability is look at the top card of your library. If it's a non-creature, non-land card, you may reveal it and put it into your hand. So, card advantage for non-creatures, non-land. -2 ability, she comes in, for what it's worth, Narset Transcendent comes in with 6 loyalty counters. So, the -2, you get to use 3 times if somebody is silly enough to let you leave it out. And it's when you cast your next instant or sorcery spell from your hand this turn, it gains rebound. That's fantastic.
Oh, that's an amazing power.
Right. If you're playing Esper, that means that your demonic tutors or your even your diabolic tutors can be used twice. The only thing that kind of holds that in check is that white and blue don't generally have any good sorceries or instants. They're really kind of... Oh, wait a second.
Who needs extra turns?
Yeah, who needs extra turns? And then, of course, her ultimate, as we talked about, is you get an emblem. It's a -9, so you're pretty dedicated to her, unless, of course, you're playing Bant and have a doubling season in play when she's cast. You get an emblem with your opponents can't cast non-creature spells.
Amazing.
Hey, I was using those.
So what Phil didn't say there is, I don't remember him saying, was she comes in at loyalty 6. So that
yes.
-9 isn't actually unachievable. 4 turns of keeping her safe before you hit that.
Yeah, but 4 turns. I mean, who would let a person do that?
Several people have let me do things like that. Loyalty 6 coming in means you can do that -2 3 times. If you don't care about her dying, you just want to get the rebound on some extra turns. The other thing is you've got a time stretch. Hit the rebound on it. It comes down, she drops the 4, and then just start +1-ing her over your next 4 free turns. That'll get her right up there pretty fast. And then hopefully in 4 turns you can get some defense out for her.
After taking 4 turns in a row, hopefully your board state is better.
One would hope.
And in those 4 turns, presumably you'd be casting, some, especially you, Sean, you'd be casting your number 4 card.
Oh, my number 4 card. Well, in Esper, it would definitely be coming down.
Yeah.
And this is also someone else's number 4. Number 4 for me is Sorin Markov. Boo! I hear a lot of you saying, boo! This is a card that arguably should be on the watch list. He is 3/3 black. So you have to be fairly heavy in black to get him out. He's a Planeswalker. Sorin comes in at loyalty 4. Yeah, +2. Sorin Markov deals 2 damage to target creature or player, and I gain 2 life.
Who cares?
Who cares? This is the one you want.
What's the next one?
-3. Target opponent's life total becomes 10.
Magister Sphinx.
If you are that target opponent, you better the next turn care about his +2.
Yeah, you're going to start to really care about it. His -7, which I've never seen happen, is you control target player during their next turn. So it might enslave someone or worst fear someone for a turn, but that will never happen with Sorin. You'll just, if you're plussing him, it's to get back to -3 him again. reducing someone's life total to 10 is brutal, especially in our court format, which is a 40 life format. It's just horrendous. Now, you need to be prepared to draw a lot of hate when you play this guy, because not only the person you're reducing the life total, now normally you're reducing the life total of someone that's got a fairly good board state, otherwise you're just being mean, so you're trying to reduce the, you know, knock someone well off the throne,
but all the other players on the board just saw you do that
and they go, you're next. It's a dangerous play, but I think if you're in the right control strategy, it's a fairly solid, well, fairly solid play is an understatement, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a fantastic play.
Yeah.
That's my number 4, so I'll be skipping my 4. Beyond that, I have nothing more to add. Wonderful card. When I first saw it, fell in love with it, picked it up, have never regretted it, except that I didn't pick up more of them.
On a tiny side note, Nate mentioned the Magister Sphinx now. That's a 5/5 flying Sphinx in Esper colors. that does the same effect, so target opponent's life total becomes 10 when it comes into play. Sorin's better because he doesn't tend to get stolen or recurred or taken out of your own graveyard and fired back at you. It's a lot harder to recur a planeswalker than it is a creature.
Well, Sorin's better for who, then?
Better for yourself, because it's not going to... You're unlikely to get hit by your own Sorin, whereas Magister Sphinx, your own Magister Sphinx, can be used against you a lot easier, in my experience. And they're two cards I've run a lot.
Well, if you're running a Magister Sphinx, you probably have some means of recurring him to hit other players at the table.
Or bouncing.
You do, but it's other people's recursion that... that it becomes a problem with it. So if it goes into your graveyard and someone's got any kind of pull that Magister Sphinx out of your graveyard, and they'll just hit you back with it.
Right.
All right.
Fair Which point. Is where it becomes a problem. Where Sorin doesn't do that too easily, as easily. Almost impossible.
True. So, Nate, what's your number four?
My number four is, if you're playing Garrick Wildspeaker, you're probably also playing Freya Lys, Llanowar's Fury, colorless.
Oh, yeah. You're so
and two
green.
Green.
You're so green.
Well, it's a good green card. Her plus two. You can get a free Llanowar elf. You put a plus one green elf druid creature token onto the battlefield with tap, add green to your mana pool. Her minus two, destroy target artifact or enchantment. Boom. Her minus six, draw a card for each green creature you control. And if you want to run a mono-green deck, Freya Lys, Llanowar's Fury, can be your commander, and she has a starting loyalty of three.
Yeah, she's pretty good as a commander in the mono-green Commander 2014 deck. With a little bit of tuning, that becomes an absolutely, absolutely deadly deck.
Yeah, it has a good elf base, and if you add the right elves into it, it's pretty devastating.
So realistically, you're paying for an enchantment there, essentially, that says you can whack a Llanowar elf into play every turn, which is just brilliant. Just brilliant. It fits into the category of planeswalkers I was talking about before that manage to defend themselves, because at worst, you can put that 1/1 out to block the creature that's going to come in and try and knock some loyalty off her.
True.
Yeah, creating a token when they come in is good. Your Garrick as well, actually. My play with that Garrick would normally be come in, put a token in. I would do that with Freya Lys, leave it up for blocking.
Yeah, if you need an emergency 3/3 beast.
Yeah, or just a blocker. But destroy target artifact or enchantment, I mean... Who'd have thought disenchant effects are powerful, eh? Yeah,
right.
Sorry, she's green. Who'd have thought naturalize effects are powerful, eh?
My only regret is that she doesn't exile target artifact or enchantment.
picky.
Yeah, totally picky.
I mean, her ultimate's not amazing, but the rest of it more than makes up.
There are other ways to get that ultimate effect, and you're probably not going to be doing it because you'll be too busy putting out green elves and destroying artifacts and enchantments. So, Sean, back to you. What's your number three?
Number three is my favorite mono-blue planeswalker, Tamio the Moonsage.
Ah, she's so nice.
Yeah, so Tamio the Moonsage is 3/2 blue for a 4 loyalty planeswalker Tamio. Plus one, tap target permanent. It does not untap during its controller's next untap step. Minus two, draw a card for each tapped creature target player controls. Minus eight, and I've got this ultimate off a few times. This is so good. You get an emblem with, you have no maximum hand size, and whenever a card is put into your graveyard from anywhere, you may return it to your hand.
I want to play against the people you play against, but without you being there.
So, what that allows you to do is... If you ultimate Tamio and you don't win, you are doing your game wrong. Just hold a counterspell in your hand if you get her ultimate off and some mana open. Normally, you're playing a blue control strategy, so you've managed to keep the board state down. So where you keep your Cyclonic Rifts and etc. in there. And she always used to sit in my... I had a Krakens and Leviathans sea ocean based deck with Thassa as the commander.
Whelming Wave.
Whelming Wave, Cyclonic Rift, all these things. Profaner of the Dead is a good one from Dragons of Tarkir.
Yeah.
Just ways to keep her up. But that tap target permanent, it doesn't untap during its controller's next untap step. Surprisingly relevant. Shut down someone's, not just the creature, but shut down someone's Gilded Lotus. So you're actually reducing them from three mana. If they've got a cheeky land, which is tapping for more than one land, you can keep that locked out of the game for a bit. It she's just pure gold. I don't think I have a blue deck that doesn't run her.
She's the Planeswalker I most want them to reprint.
Yeah, she's getting quite pricey because she only got she Avacyn Restored.
Yeah,
and
she's currently $17.75 or so, including shipping.
Yeah, I mean, I bought a couple when she was about £8.
Lucky.
But yeah, she's shooting up over here on this side of the pond as well.
Yeah, she's really started climbing in this modern season.
It's because she's mono blue as well. She fits into lots of decks. Blue's a very popular color, you may have heard. And there are times where people put too many Jaces in their decks. There's five different Jaces. And if you've got a Jace in play and you draw another one, that kind of sucks. Whereas Tamiyo lets you get it down. Yeah, she's just brilliant.
Because the legend rule applies among all the Jaces.
It's not the legend rule. The Planeswalkers have their own rule because they don't see each other like legendary creatures do. But every Planeswalker has a name. So all the Sorins, for example, are called Planeswalker Sorin. Regardless of whether they're Lords of Innistrad or just very sad.
Ah, I see.
So, Nate, what's your number three?
Okay, my picks are starting to get into table flipping territory. Sarkhan Vaal. He's two colorless, a red and a green. His plus one. Creatures you control get +1/+1 and gain haste until end of turn. His minus two. Gain control of target creature until end of turn. Untap that creature, it gains haste until end of turn. Hey, that's a nice thing over there. I'm going to take that and hit you with it. His ultimate, and I've actually managed to get this off, but then it got hit by a board wipe. It was a sad day. It was immediately struck down. His ultimate, minus six, put 5/4/4 red dragon creature tokens with flying onto the battlefield. Instant dragon swarm. Boom.
Nice. I've used Sarkhan Vaal, but I've never managed to get the ultimate off. Again, maybe I'm just not doing it right, but I don't seem to be able to get to the ultimate before somebody wipes out my planeswalkers. I don't really care too much because, after all, we're getting all of those fancy pluses, but still. This one is nice, though. When you drop it and then gain control of some target creature and you have a sac outlet, bam. It's brutal.
Yeah, the treason effect, which is a phrase often used for that red ability to steal one creature, untap it, and give it haste, is really, really nice. Threaten, sorry, not treason. Treason with the blue card, isn't it? Anyway,
yeah.
That threaten effect, which is the word we give to that red ability to steal a creature, untap it, and give it haste, really nice. Probably at worst, you're getting two of them. Very, very good. The haste becomes incredibly relevant, especially if you're playing a dragon-y kind of deck. Not too many dragons come with haste on them. There's a few. But being able to put 5/4/4 dragons onto the table, relatively likely comes in at loyalty 4. You only need to keep him around for 3 turns to get that off. Is nice. He's a little weak to board wipes, but or board wipe yourself, then activate his ultimate. There's a suggestion.
Yeah, and as threaten effects go, he's still pretty inexpensive because of the ability to either absorb an attack or reuse him the next turn. Threatens only 2 in a red, and he is, of course, 2 in a green and a red. That happens to be the same converted mana cost for my number 3 pick. It's a really pricey card, and I don't expect anybody to have it. And in fact, the only reason I have it is because I picked up from the Vault 20, and it's Jace the Mind Sculptor.
Mm-hmm.
He's 2 and 2 blues For his plus two is look at the top card of target player's library. You may put that card on the bottom of that player's library. His plus zero, or minus zero, or just his zero, is draw three cards, then put two cards from your hand on top of your library in any order. It's a brainstorm effect. That's just fantastic, and it's reusable. His minus one is return target creature to its owner's hand. And then his minus 12 is exile all cards from target player's library. Then that player shuffles his or her hand into his or her library. And he comes into play with three loyalty counters. So even if you've got a doubling season out when you cast Jace the Mind Sculptor, you are not going to get this ultimate off. I have never seen the ultimate get carried off, but then again, I'm probably not playing with the same people you guys are.
No, I've never seen it.
No, so we do have one person in our group, goes by the name of Scoops, uses Jace the Mind Sculptor, and he's rarely been alive for a turn, let alone got the ultimate off.
Yeah,
so I'm gonna ask you a question, Phil. Is four mana worth a sorcery speed brainstorm?
No, if you're not looking at repeating it, it certainly is not. Jace is one of those I've learned the hard way to make sure that I have multiple flying protectors out when I cast Jace. Otherwise, he goes away rapidly.
Yeah, so I looked at all the five Jaces for... I contemplated all five Jaces for my list because I wanted one Jace on there. And if I'm honest, the Mind Sculptor was way down with Living Guild Pact as Jace that I just went, no. I think it's got too much of a reputation from its days in Standard. It plays brilliantly in a Standard or Modern... Well, is it banned in Modern still? Probably. It plays brilliantly in a casual Standard control deck. But I think for EDH, you want either Baby Jace, Jace Bellerin, which we're not going to discuss now because he's not on anyone's list, or Architect of Thought.
Hey, spoiler.
Oh, no one's picked Jace Bellerin. I think his reputation precedes him way too much. I think as soon as you drop him, everyone hates on him, possibly unfairly, because look at top card player's library, put it onto the bottom of their library. Meh, it's okay. The player's not missing anything because they didn't know most of the time what was on top of their library unless they're divining topping. Four mana for a sorcery speed brainstorm is not particularly good. Four mana for a bounce is very poor. Sorcery speed bounce for a four mana. And his minus 12 ability will never happen.
Nope.
But that's my two cents on Jace the Mind Sculptor. And unless you're lucky enough to own a from the Vault 20, you're going to be paying, $70-$80 for one?
I'm not.
No, it's a little more than that.
Has it gone up? Right. Oh, it's going to be £70 or £80, yeah. So, I don't know. I'm not convinced. Kids, if you've got that kind of money to spend on a card, I wouldn't suggest it's him.
Yes, I would not suggest buying a Jace the Mind Sculptor at $90 either. That said, it's a pretty useful effect to have a brainstorm every turn. And so if you can protect him like you were saying, and he doesn't protect himself, but if you can protect him, a repeatable brainstorm is pretty sweet. That's worth four mana, even at sorcery speed.
Mm.
Sure.
Well, that's why I throw, Divining Top and now Miri's Guile, which Nate introduced me to. And, of course, I've been using Sylvan Library for almost every game I've played since the start.
What you're saying is you need a bunch of green enchantments to support your mono-blue Planeswalker.
No, I'm saying that he's redundant to that effect.
Right. Yeah.
Sean, you're number two.
My number two is a very recently printed Planeswalker. My number two is Dak Faden, or as I like to call him, Dak Faden. He is Planeswalker Dak for one blue and one red. It comes in with loyalty 3. It's plus 1. Target player draws 2 cards, then discards 2 cards. Minus 2, gain control of target artifact. Minus...
Give me that.
Oh, God, it's so good. Minus 6, You get an emblem with, whenever you cast a spell that targets one or more permanents, gain control of those permanents.
Give me all of those.
So, this was printed in Conspiracy recently and is seeing a lot of Legacy play, so I would try and get one if you were interested in one now whilst Conspiracy is still in print, because it's already...
Oh, no. I wouldn't even say Conspiracy is still in print. Conspiracy is sold out nearly everywhere.
Oh, you can get them in England. You can get them fine.
You can?
Yeah, oh yeah, loads over here. In fact, there was one web store selling them off for pretty much a third off the price of a box. But that's a different story.
What?
Get hold of Dax while you can, because they are only going to go up, and it's a card that's unlikely to be printed, reprinted anytime soon.
Yeah. It's a $35 card right now on the low end.
Wow. So,
yeah,
it's in pretty janky colors. Red, blue isn't that popular as a set, but Teemer, which is red, blue, green, is very popular, and he fits into any deck. So anyone think of any artifacts which are popular in our format? At the very worst, you're paying 3 mana to come down, steal someone's soul ring, and sit there and go, well, if you don't kill him, I'm going to get another one in a turn and a half. The target player draws 2 and discards 2 is a very red and blue effect. It's a red effect in that you're going to have to discard cards to draw, but it's blue in that you draw the 2 cards before you discard the other 2. Unlike, yeah, say, Duretti's looting effect, which is discard 2, then draw 2. So you have a lot more control over his ability. The ultimate, if you get that off, you should be able to win in Is It Colors, because you should be running a lot of spells. Targeting stuff with spells or abilities is just... Sorry, it's when you cast a spell. You should be casting a lot of spells that target things. Just gaining control of them. He's the ultimate thief. He's brilliant. He's just brilliant. He's only 3 to cast, which is a nice low CMC for a planeswalker. Get him out early game, which is his own form of protection.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen the ultimate get used, and really, there aren't a lot of spells that you're casting on your opponent's permanents that don't ultimately destroy them. Now, certainly you could cast, you know, an aura or something like that, a beneficial aura, and then gain control of it, but you will have had to have ultimated Dak Faden, and really that minus 2, every chance you get to fire that off, or every chance I've gotten to fire it off or seen it, they've taken it, right? It's just grab an artifact, and it's a permanent effect change.
Yeah, so 3 mana for take control of target artifact at sorcery speed, I think is an effect you would play in Commander, especially if you got the chance to recur it.
Right, because the nearest, the typical cost for that is usually you're playing something flexible like take control of target permanent, and those are 5 and above.
Yeah, they absolutely are. He's fantastic. There's loads of great things. Worm coil engines, etc. Just take control of something big.
Well, he could make all of your threaten effects permanent in the red. He can make all of your red threaten effects permanent.
Well, only if they're spells.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
Yeah, so, you know, something like a Zealous Conscript does when you cast the spell. Actually, it's not targeting when you cast the spell. It's targeting when it enters the battlefield, so it doesn't count. Act of Treason does become permanent. So, yeah, I guess there are some ways to get benefits out of it.
But as we say about Planeswalkers, it's not the ultimate you put the card in the deck for normally. It's the 2 abilities above it, right, or sometimes 3 abilities. And I think both of them are very good on deck. The one thing that kept him out of my number one spot was his colors.
And his mana cost is so low.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's popular in the Tiny Leaders format, too.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, Legacy Tiny Leaders. It's driving that price up. And, of course, he's likely to be in the same deck that plays Nate's number 2.
Uh-oh, yeah. If you like blue and you like red... Hey, maybe you've heard of the Grixis. They're blue, yeah, red, and black. And if you want a table flipper, Nicol Bolas Planeswalker.
I love this card.
His loyalty starts at 5, but his first power, the one that gains him 3 loyalty, destroy target non-creature permanent.
Mm.
His minus 2, gain control of target creature.
Ugh. Okay, it's just so rude.
And his ultimate? Nicol Bolas Planeswalker deals 7 damage to target player. That player discards 7 cards, then sacrifices 7 permanents.
Oh, God.
Have you? It's like the Cruel Ultimatum has this guy in the card art. It's all about him.
Yeah, so Cruel Ultimatum is a sorcery speed for 6 mana that does his ultimate once.
Yeah. Has anybody used this ultimate?
Yep.
I have only just recently added him to my Jaleva and my Marquesa decks.
So I have used his ultimate.
Oh my god.
His ultimate is surprisingly easy to get to. So he comes in at loyalty 5, but his ability to just drop him in, +3, put him up to 8, destroy target non-creature permanent. I mean, that's an amazing effect. The +3 again puts him right up there. So because it's +3, it'll put him up to 10. It'll put him up to 11. That means he can actually take a couple of hits and still be able to pull into his ultimate range.
Yeah. I didn't mention his casting cost, which is difficult. It's 4 colorless, a blue, 2 black, and a red.
Yeah, it's high, but the colour sweep in it, because he didn't make my list because he's triple colour. That was the only thing that stopped him making my list.
Well, he's in my list because he's in my favourite 3 colours.
Yeah. Grixis is fantastic. But when he drops onto the table, if the best thing that's going to happen to you is if your person who plays him is targeting you, the best thing that's going to happen to you is they're destroying one of your non-creature permanents and his planeswalker's getting +3 tokens. That's the best thing that's going to happen to you. You're in for a rough ride.
Yeah, you are.
He's really cheap as well, like pounds-wise dollars-wise. He is not an expensive card at all, relatively speaking. All Planeswalkers, with the exception of Tybalt, are a little pricey compared to other generic mythics.
And Jace Architect.
Yeah, he's cheap because of his reprints.
Yeah, Nicol Bolas is only about $8, $9.
If you're playing Grixis, it would be rude not to put him in a deck. Good pick, Nate. Good pick.
Yeah, that is a very good pick. Maybe as good as my second pick, my number 2, rather. again, favoring this definitely demonstrates the types of decks we each like to play, right? So for number 2, my number 2 is Garruk, Caller of Beasts. For 4 and 2 green, you get a Planeswalker Garruk with 4 loyalty counters, and his +1 is reveal the top 5 cards of your library, put all creature cards revealed this way into your hand, and the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. Again, I'm playing creature-heavy decks, and so this is just almost always useful. Generally speaking, I can get about 2 cards off of that. His -3 is you may put a green creature card from your hand onto the battlefield.
Oh.
I have... I've used that when I'm holding a Terastodon, and so I'll throw a Terastodon down for basically 6 mana and 3 loyalty counters. And that is generally enough to make a person wince or groan like you just did. And this is an ultimate I've used more than once, and because of both Doubling Season and because I've clawed my way up to it. You get an emblem with whenever you cast a creature spell, you may search your library for a creature card, put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. That is unbelievable when you can get it off.
Do green decks have a lot of creatures?
It turns out they do. And the best use of that emblem was I dropped a primordial Hydra for some massive amount, like, you know, 7 or 8 counters. And then because I had the temerity to cast a creature while I had this emblem out, I then went fishing for a Terastodon. Sorry, I'm giggling.
This is why I hate you.
But, you know, again, it's not some underhanded scheming thing that a Grixis player or a Dimir player might do.
Yeah.
This is straight up in your face. Let's go.
So this card gets used a lot by Pete, who's plays my paper group. He will use that +1 ability with a Prophet of Krufix in play and abuse the hell out of it. It's filthy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
it's as you say, Phil, in a creature heavy deck, that's basically plus one to draw a couple of cards.
Yeah. Yeah. On the downside, you're putting everything else at the bottom of your deck.
Is it a downside, though?
No.
The only thing that would make that better is if you put them into your graveyard and you put them in a Abzan color and then start abusing the crap out of your... abusing the hell out of your graveyard as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'd love to keep talking about Garruk, but it's time for our number one choices. We actually have... Oh, wait, I don't want to spoil it. Sean, why don't you tell us your number one choice?
So,
also a fantastic card.
I can hear you all thinking, which blue or black planeswalker is Sean picked for his number one choice?
Surely it's Ashiok.
Ashiok is good in very specific decks. No, my number one choice is Her Royal Highness, Queen Elspeth Sun's Champion.
What?
Is she a queen?
Oh, she is in my heart. I love this card. It's 4/2 white for Planeswalker.
She is the champion. No time for losing. Because she is the champion of the sun.
You know, that now has to get made, Nate. And if you do that, we'll put it at the end of the episode if you can do it fast. But that's
there's got to be a karaoke version of that song out there.
You know, I think there's an unexplored niche that Commander and podcast may be unexplored here.
Comedy tunes.
Yeah, song parodies on YouTube.
Song parodies and impressions of Planeswalkers, because we've got this covered. Right. I should do Elspeth as the queen, shouldn't I?
Oh, hello.
Yes.
Anyway, Elspeth, Sun's Champion. She is 4/2 white for a Planeswalker Elspeth. She enters the battlefield with 4 loyalty. Her plus 1 ability is put 3 1/1 soldier white soldier creature tokens onto the battlefield.
That's handy.
That's amazing. Her minus 3 ability is, and this is a not, oh, just so good, destroy all creatures with power 4 or greater. That's right.
Oh.
She's a board wipe. Minus 7, which I've got to before because she protects herself so nicely, is you get an emblem with creatures you control, get +2/+2, and have flying. Now, remember, to get to that +4, you've normally generated 9 1/1 white soldier tokens that become 3/3 flying soldier tokens. This is an amazing card for any control strategy. She comes down, she puts tokens in. She synergies up with so many effects like Cathar's Crusade, all sorts of token stuff. If you're in white, you might be running Anthem effects to give your weenies pluses on their stats.
1/2.
Yeah. At worst, she comes down. White generally plays into a strategy of smaller utility creatures. So at worst, she comes down and wipes the table of all those big, powerful threats that have been looking at you funny. And she still sits on the table at loyalty 1. And because she protects herself so beautifully, that ultimate is very achievable. She's just so good. And she's just been reprinted in Elspeth versus Kiora, which means she is plummeting in price, especially when Theros cycles out of standard very soon.
Oh, yeah. Right now, she's only about $7, which is still... which is fairly low since, you know, she kind of debuted at $30, stayed up there and hovered around 20 for most of her time in standard. And when it rotates, I can only assume that it'll drop a little bit, and that's when you snap it up, because this card is going to be... I think this card will kind of eternally be popular and up around the $10, $15 mark once it gets rare.
So I have a question about Elspeth in general, which ties into one of our listeners submitted a decklist to us we'll talk about briefly later. This other card was in it. So I've seen a lot of white decks that run Elspeth Knight Errant, which is a 4 to cast, and her plus 1 is put 1 soldier token into play. Why in EDH would you not automatically swap that out for Sun's Champion?
That's a good point.
With
so would you swap ultimate? Out Well, yeah.
But if you're only going to have one Elspeth in the deck, wouldn't it be this one?
That's the question. Sorry, yeah, Nate's boiled it down to the nub of what I'm trying to say. If you're running one Elspeth, why would it not be Sun's Champion? You've got board wipe, you're creating three tokens, especially if you're running any kind of token strategy. I don't know. Listeners, if you can suggest to me why...
The only reason I ever run Knight Errant is because I'm running either a Super Friends deck, or I've got a green-white tokens deck, or, you know, tokens in that in those colors that also has doubling season. Because Knight Errant, when you can get her, when you can get that ultimate out, it's absolutely fantastic. And the only way you're getting the ultimate out is with a doubling season. So I know that reeks of magical Christmas land, but generally in a white-green deck, you have a way to either recur or tutor for an enchantment. So you do that and either immediately play the Knight Errant if you have the four extra mana, or next turn you play the Knight Errant, and then all of a sudden everything you have essentially is indestructible.
That's handy.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I've actually ultimated that before.
That strategy depends on having the doubling season there.
Absolutely. It's not a great strategy otherwise. The target creature gets +3/+3 and gains flying until end of turn. That's not something to laugh off. So you drop her for 4 mana. She goes up to 4 loyalty. Goes up to 5 loyalty immediately. So the worst thing that you're looking at in a practical sense is, you know, a flying 4/4 becomes a a 4/4 becomes a flying 7/7. And that's not bad at all, right? And anybody who puts a 1/1 white soldier creature token onto the battlefield has no creatures in play.
In our scenario we're talking here, where we're having an Elspeth off, your flying 4/4 gets wiped by my Elspeth in my turn.
Not really.
Destroy all creatures with power 4 or greater?
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I automatically went to a 1/1 that flies for 4/4.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, but again, I'm not using her for either of her plus one. The only reason I'd use her is for the tantalizing nature of that ultimate. If I drop her and I get a 5 loyalty Elspeth that gives one of my creatures +3/+3, cool. And you know what? I'll get that on 2 turns before your Elspeth can wipe my creature.
I think that this comes down to a different philosophy as in Planeswalker. As I said earlier, I only look at a Planeswalker for its first 2 abilities, or 3 abilities in 4
right.
Planeswalker. The ultimate is just...
It's gravy.
It is.
And I completely agree, and this is the one exception to that. So I almost completely agree, technically. This is the one exception. I will put her out on the off chance I have doubling season in play first. In a Selesnya deck, yes.
Well, I hope Santa Claus brings you all you want this Christmas, Phil.
Yes. Well, Santa Claus has brought me that gift twice before.
Well, looks like you were on the nice list. Anyway, yeah. That's Elspeth Sun's Champion. If you're running white, I highly recommend.
That totally is best case scenario syndrome, and Sun's Champion is a better card overall.
Yeah, if you're playing green and white. But what if you're not playing green and white?
Well, if you're not playing green and white,
if you're playing some other color, then what kind of planeswalker are you going to have? Maybe you want a good planeswalker that you can access no matter what you're playing.
What planeswalker might that be?
Well, my number one pick, you might know him as Eugene. I'm going to call him Ugin the Spirit Dragon, and he costs 8 colorless, and he has a loyalty of 7, and his +2 power, Ugin the Spirit Dragon deals 3 damage to target creature or player, lightning bolt every turn, bam. His minus X power, exile each permanent with converted mana cost X, that or less, that's 1 or more colors.
Oh.
So you can basically drop him on the field, and it's kind of like an All Is Dust, if you just do that for 7 immediately.
Yeah.
How much is All Is Dust CMC? It's 7 itself, isn't it?
Yep.
So he's only 1 more to outcast than All Is Dust as well. Beautiful.
Yep. And his -10, which is a symmetry to Nicol Bolas, You gain 7 life, you draw 7 cards, then you put up to 7 permanent cards from your hand onto the battlefield. So it's like a mini Genesis wave for 7. Sort of.
You know, I've decided after hearing Nate read that, and this is also my number one card because of the potential that it offers, I've decided I'm going to put Ugin in every single deck that I build. Just to test.
All right.
Give it a test drive.
I own one, and he's currently in a Joyer of the Gitu deck.
Not bad.
Yeah, not bad at all.
Yeah, because he doesn't kill my Eldrazi for a few reasons.
I own one, and he's currently in a binder to my left.
Yes, ironically for Vorthos players, it's pretty handy to put Ugin the Spirit Dragon in your Eldrazi-themed decks.
You know, yeah, I think that's completely intentional. There are no coincidences.
They're all working together. Friendly. Yep.
What? Didn't Ugin go out of his way to stop the Eldrazi?
Well, if only the Eldrazi had colors in their mana cost.
Yeah, but in the story, Ugin, Sorin, and Nahiri work as a trifecta of kill all the Eldrazi. They fail, so they decide to imprison them instead.
They actually don't try to kill them. Ugin tries to imprison them.
I'm sure they try to kill them first and fail.
He likes exiling.
Yeah, he drew the Eldrazi to Zendikar as a way to imprison them and protect the multiverse so that they could be studied while imprisoned.
Poor Eldrazi. I wish I had a Kozilek in a cage I could just look at.
Yeah, if only someone had thought to free them, maybe, so that they could enjoy their own natural habitat, which is everywhere.
Which is the space between space. So why is Ugin your number one choice? I got quite passionate about mine. Why is Ugin number one? Why is he the best planeswalker for our format?
Well, he fits in any color deck. And he flips the table whenever he gets on the field.
And I think ultimately he has a better impact in our format than even Karn does. I realize that them's fighting words. But this is Commander and...
Yeah, Karn Liberated, it would just, his ultimate is just annoying to the entire table.
Karn's ultimate is beyond annoying.
Karn's ultimate is fantastic. If he restarts the game, so Karn's ultimate is -14, restart the game, leaving in exile all non-aura permanent cards exiled with Karn Liberated, then put those cards onto the battlefield under your control. If you've done your job right, you've exiled at least 4 things, right? At least 3 things, really, and then ultimated this guy, and it's a brutal, brutal game. There's almost no way to win from that if you're the victim of a Karn. But that said, he's not going to ultimate very often.
No.
He does exile a lot of cards.
I do think it's interesting that at the moment, both Ugin Spirit Dragon and Karn Liberated are in print.
Again, no accidents there. No coincidences.
Colorless Planeswalkers. So they fit in every deck. It's a big tick box for them. The exile each permanent converted mana cost X or less is really, really powerful. Gets past indestructible. It's just great.
And it's tunable minus X.
Yeah, it's awfully good.
So I was the victim of a Ugin Spirit Dragon just last night. It drops onto the table and you're just like, oh God, now everything's going to die. Well, it's not even going to die, it's going to leave the game. I had to cost an utter end to deal with him.
Wow.
Yeah, it was the only way I could get rid of him because everything that came down was either... in the range of him being lightning bolted or already been exiled from the turn he dropped.
That's horrible.
Yeah. He's a worthy contender for top spot, I think.
So, guys, as we playtest decks, I think you can look forward to seeing more Ugins.
Yay, I look forward to it.
And so we've done our favorites, but over the last couple of days, and Sean, you started this ball rolling, but you asked our listeners for their favorite planeswalkers. We... then turned it into a favorite planeswalkers and a story about them. Some people gave us decent Some people gave us very entertaining stories, and this was over mostly Twitter, and so it was in the span of 140 characters or less. Heather Dawn, who we all know as @RevisedAngel, who writes for Gathering Magic, she chose Jace the Mind Sculptor and Gideon.
Which Gideon?
She didn't specify actually which Gideon, so let's just assume she means all of them.
But, both of them. Although we're getting a new one, aren't we, soon?
Yeah, well, who is it? Gideon Jura and Gideon Champion of Justice. These are cards I actually own, but still have never managed to find room for it in my Commander deck. So maybe she'll share that story with us at a future...
Gideon gets overlooked, I think, a bit. He's actually really annoying when he hits the table. He just keeps punching you in the face and...
Well, which Gideon? Jura?
Yeah, yeah, Jura. The one that turns into a dude.
Yeah, his zero is until end of turn. Gideon Jura becomes a 6/6 human soldier creature. That's still a planeswalker. Prevent all damage that would be dealt to him this turn. That's so that he can attack into something and not lose any planeswalker counters when he takes damage.
Yep, he's good. He's good like that.
Yeah, he's pretty good. Our next one is EDH.Ghost, who's actually @EDHGhost. And he describes a scenario in which, I'll just quote him, doubling season hit, followed by Sarkhan Vol, and then Dragon Broodmother. I love 4-on-1 games that I win. Bam!
Not necessarily a him.
Not necessarily a him, you're right.
So, is he or she the ghost of EDH, or is she a ghost or that plays EDH? Ooh.
Spooky. Could be a StarCraft ghost who plays EDH.
Lost on me
time.
Now. Don't play StarCraft.
Sorry. That's a game we play on computer machines.
Computers. As I told you, in England, we no longer fear electricity. We just treat it with suspicion.
Matt Lewis, who is @LewisMD13.
One of my absolute favorite planeswalkers, this one, but very linear.
Yeah, Jace Memory Adept. Isn't this the one they call Baby Jace?
No, that's Jace Barrett. So Jace Memory Adept is the 5 to cast guy, but his main ability that I think Matt will be talking about here is for 0, target player puts the top 10 cards of their library into their graveyard. Yes. Mill 10.
Yes, fantastic in a mill deck, and he's got, he says, Jace Memory Adept in my Bug Sidisi deck. Fill up that graveyard, then cast Spider Spawning. Oh, brutal.
Oh,
that's horrible.
facilitate all your delve that will be going on in there as well. That's very powerful.
Delving and dredging. Yeah. If you're horrible.
Bug, for those people who are down with the kids, is Sultai nowadays.
Yes.
See, I'm hip. I'm with it.
Hey, so Sean, why don't you read your fellow European Robin Larson's?
Yeah, so Robin Larson, who is @Purgatog. On Twitter, he Venza the Sojourner. He's nuts in a Zedrude deck, and saying, "You own that." So, Illusions of Grandeur, which is a hilarious card that you can then blink. So, Illusions of Grandeur comes into play, gives you a load of life, and it remains in play. You lose a load of life. So, what you do with Venza and Zedrude is you play it, gain a load of life, and then donate it over to your opponent and make it theirs permanently. And then you can steal it back with the Venza and then re-give it to someone else afterwards by blinking it with the Venza, which is mean. Really, really mean. I approve. Highly, highly approve.
But that's how Zedru works, by giving other people broken
cards. But Venza allows you to take it back.
Yes, that's good.
Venza lets you take it back and then give it away again.
I've played against a pretty mean Zedru deck. Brenton had one, and it's horrible.
He's not mean.
It seems so fluffy and soft.
He's great-hearted.
Yes. I think technically Zedru is female, too.
Yes. I'm looking wasn't at the staring now. At the gender of the goat shaman. Phil.
Zedru is a minotaur monk, sir.
Sorry. Phil, are you a furry?
So, what's our next one?
Oh, just on a quick Zedru note, hilarious card with Zedru, aggressive mining. Anyway, carry on.
Oh, yes. Why don't you read the next one here?
Nate, would you like to? Oh, would you want me to? So, Gathering 4 Magic, who is at Gathering 4, that's the number 4 Magic on Twitter. Hi, Gathering 4 Magic says, Xenagos the Reveler does serious work in a Prosh, casting broken spells. Gathering 4 Magic recently cast a turn 6 Prosh, a turn 7 Diabolic Tutor, Fine Crater Hoof Behemoth, cast it off of Xenagos, crush both opponents. So I won't go through all those cards, but those that go, what, how does that work? That's Xenagos the Reveler, Prosh, then Diabolic Tutor or any tutor to find Crater Hoof Behemoth and laugh as your opponents die. It is funny. Oh, really funny. God.
That's nasty. Oh my goodness. I want to do that. Can I do that?
You can do that, Phil. Yeah. You're using...
Let me just start with all those cards in hand.
As I said, you're using one of the cards that are outside of my color square, so... Says the man that had a Gave deck earlier. Yeah.
At Adam 2357 says, Tezzeret the Seeker in Reaper King deck.
Oh.
He's ramp, fixing, tutor. Plus, he does a really good Nev's Disc impersonation if needed. And on this advice, I just added him to my Reaper King deck as a test drive, and I took out Demonic Tutor to do it.
You took out... Tezzeret. Did you say you took out Demonic Tutor?
Yeah, I swapped out Demonic Tutor to test drive Tezzeret the Seeker.
That's a bold move, sir.
It is.
Adam 2357, on that advice, Nate is putting it in his deck. Thanks a lot. Cheers. I really appreciate that.
Oh, wow.
That deck needed to get better as well, the Reaper King deck. So,
yeah, it was starting to slow down a little.
That just puts it right on the battlefield. Wait a minute. Oh, hey.
It does, okay. But I'm suggesting there's a card other than Demonic Tutor that could make space for Tezzeret. That's for a different conversation. Nate.
At Mr. E-Meat 4000 says...
Hi, Mr. E-Meat 4000.
The other Tezzeret, Agent of Bolas, in Sidri Galvanic Genius. And specifically, he turned Dark Steel Plate into a 5/5 creature, then give it Death Touch and Lifelink. This is like Team Batterskulls. They just keep manufacturing Batterskulls out of any artifact that you throw on the field.
Yeah, it's a good debate, which is the better Tezzeret. You can do some horrible things with both of them.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah. The worst, I use my Tezzeret Seeker to go and, for zero loyalty, go and pull one of the artifact lands out of my deck.
Yeah, that's handy.
Yeah, ramping's the worst thing you can do if you're Planeswalker, then you're doing the game right. But yeah, Sidri's also an interesting commander I'd like to discuss in more detail one day. So if you have a Sidri deck, Mr. E-Meat 4000, I'd love to see the list.
You and your blue-black stuff.
I think you'll find that's blue-black-white.
I know.
Sidri's Esper all the way.
Well, that was Sean J. Marvin, or as I like to think of him, maybe up until he plays Sidric Galvanic Genius, the good Sean.
Whoa. Maybe it's, if you're called Sean, you like Esper. Just something that happens.
Maybe.
Any other Seans out there that like blue, black, white, let me know. We'll form a club.
Nicholas Jaragoski at Radis Nick. We've actually played with Nick quite a bit. He says, Garrick Wildspeaker. He's everything I ever wanted for my token decks. He's in fairly good company because we had Josh Lee Kwai at Josh Lee Kwai from the Command Zone. He also cites Garrick Wildspeaker as his favorite planeswalker. His story is not a good one, though, so I
can
skip it.
Can I read his story? I wasn't there, but it makes my heart sing. Josh says, Garrick Wildspeaker, I remember using Interlock at Ketjack, also known as Phil from the Commander Room podcast, to lock at Ketjack out of a game using Stasis and Derevi Imperial Genius, or Tactician, yes. Sorry. That's funny.
And he took the time to put a thumbs up emoticon in his response. Yeah. That was a nasty game. He played Derevi I sort of knew what was coming, but I haven't seen a stasis deck in about 2 years. And he proceeded to punish us all with stasis. There was another player at the table who did not destroy the stasis when he could.
Oh,
and
silly boy. I presume it was a
yes.
man to make
and
such a stupid decision.
And you held that player responsible for
we
the
did.
Rest of the game.
Yes, we did. It was so long. I think that game was so long that Jimmy then had to... He played his Kiki Jiki deck so that we could get a game in that lasted only 6 turns. And he did. He said... He pulled it out. He's like, look, guys... I'm just playing this so that we can play more than one game of Magic tonight.
Excellent.
Yeah, and I was playing the Mimeoplasm, and the Mimeoplasm still cries whenever it hears the name Derevi.
Where, presumably the Mimeoplasm cries out of multitudes of eyes that keep reforming and then being reabsorbed into its body.
Yes, it's the wailing from multiple mouths that really makes it difficult to bear.
I imagine it's like a Shoggoth from Cthulhu.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's well, cool. Yes, but when they're all crying like babies, that's a little difficult to tolerate.
It's a card I've always wanted to use, run as a commander Mimeoplasm, but its identity is so linked with you, DeLuca, that I feel like I'll be like stepping on your turf or something.
Well, not only would you be stepping on my turf, you'd be doing it better. And so please, just leave me the Mimeoplasm.
Okay, I'll do a deal. I'll leave you Mimeoplasm, you leave me Lazav.
Probably a good deal.
Deal! Yay!
Although I think Lazav will make an appearance in Mimeoplasm at some point when I switch over.
That's fine.
When I just play with the mill version.
Just as commander. Anyway, I'd like to say welcome Link, who is at MoxBant. To our little commander in circle, and he has contacted us with Nissa Worldwaker and Garruk Wildspeaker, both ramping really well and can protect themselves, which is playing into what I was saying right at the beginning of this topic of planeswalkers. They play into your deck strategy and protect themselves. It's that protection which is so key to a good planeswalker, in my humble opinion.
Now, you played Link the other night. Did he manage to get out either a Nissa Worldwaker or a Garruk Wildspeaker?
I played him the other night. We played 3 games. The first game was pretty close, but I misplayed. Earl could have swept the board, but he didn't. And then his Titania just turned all his lands into elementals and smacked me.
We have been joined by our youngest listener, by the way. Sorry. If you hear a baby,
hey,
speaking,
Blake.
So, Nate, why don't you read Wafflecone? Because we actually met him. He's Jacob.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Blake.
So, at WC Power, Wafflecone says he really likes Nahiri the Lithomancer to play her in the 99 of his Aurelia deck. The angel that gets the double strike, gets battalion online, dumps swords out. He had Aurelia equipped with Stoneforge Blade, which is Nahiri's ultimate artifact creation thing, and it was absurd. And she dumps equipment out, and that's what the deck needs.
Yeah, she doesn't quite have double strike. She has Flying Vigilance and Haste, and whenever she attacks for the first time each turn, untap all creatures you control.
She gets double combat rounds.
Double combat rounds.
She's no joke.
Yeah, I've seen Aurelia as part of a Gisela deck, and it's a one-turn kill, usually for 2 opponents. It's just absolutely brutal. So if he's doing this and he actually got Stoneforge Blade on her, ugh, amazing. Good work, Wafflecone.
Oh, sorry, that is Blake pressing Timmy the Turn Turtle.
Well,
all right.
It's funny he should do that, because unless we've got something else we really want to cover, we're at the end of the episode. What do you think, Blake?
Blake?
He says, no, we're done.
Also, it appears that the Queen is using the internet in England, so I might be breaking up a little bit.
Yes.
Just explain, American listeners, when the Queen wants to use the internet, she takes all our bandwidth.
It's her right as a divine monarch.
We give it willingly, though, so it's okay.
Exactly.
Well, I think it's been fun. I think Planeswalkers in Commander is an interesting topic, and I'm sure there are people out there screaming at us, no, you didn't pick insert your favourite planeswalker here, or obvious omission that we skipped over because you're smarter than us. Please contact us on all our usual social media outlets, which are
on Facebook we're Commander and on Facebook we're on Commander and MTG, and on Twitter we're at Commander and MTG. Individually on Twitter I'm at Ketjack.
I am at Copain26.
I'm at Mr. Plorg.
And we will happily reply to any of your questions, queries, anything you like.
Absolutely. And you can reach us anytime you want on any of those at any of those locations. And we really thank you for downloading and listening. We love to hear from you, so please take the time to write to us. Tweet us, Facebook us, whatever the proper verb is for that. I guess it's post. And if you really like what you're hearing, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Really appreciate that. So I think until next time, you should get some Commander in.
Meow.
What do you say, Child of Alara?
Child of Alara, what do you say? Do you say Commander in? All right, for the first time ever, he goes quiet. Typical child.
Well, he heard something he really liked.
Yes. What's this? What's right. this? You get so, press the turn turtle. There we go.
And
yikes.
And that's our show. Yeah.
Meow.